of course, Chris McCarthy after that, and Barry this afternoon. And Saturday, we get a new lineup, and it starts this coming Saturday, and I'm very excited about it because I've got my own show after filling in for a number of years. And it's the Paul Santo Show, 7 to 9 a.m. in the spot where Brian's beat used to be. So 7 to 9 a.m. this coming Saturday. It'll be a lot of fun. It'll go by quick because it's 2 hours, but we'll move things along. I like to keep things moving anyway. And that'll be followed, of course, by Ken Pittman, 9 to noon as usual. And then Brian Thomas will go to the afternoon with Brian's beat from 1 to 4. So we'll have live talk pretty much all day Saturday, like we do during the week. So that'll be fantastic. You know, that's 6 days of live and local. That's what we like to do here at WBSM. So that'll be a lot of fun starting this coming Saturday. And you know that you talk with us just about every day, and now you can win cash with us every day too. We're making the money talk with your chance to win $1,000 every single day. Now listen, weekdays from 8 until 5 in each hour, and you'll hear a 3-digit cash code to enter in the WBSM app. The more you enter, the better chance you have at hearing that money talk and winning $1,000. Plus, Thursdays, it's only 2 days from now, are $10,000 Thursdays. You could win 10 grand. 10 grand just for listening and entering those cash codes. Download the WBSM app for rules and details. And to win with Money Talks. Money Talks on WBSM is brought to you by Long Moving and Storage. You know, a caller had called this morning and complimented my parents, and it's very nice to hear that. Well, you know, my dad used to have a saying, money talks and you know what walks. So that's the first thing I could think of. He used to say that all the time, money talks and something else walks. So that was always a lot of fun. And, you know, talking about the rail train making noise and being really loud and obnoxious. And one of the callers said, you know, if you hear it all the time, you start to block it out and you start to adapt to it. And somebody that I know, I believe it might have even been my daughter-in-law, said that when she moved into Bridgewater State University and stayed in the dorms at first, she'd be like, oh my God, that train. And then after a few weeks, she started not to notice it, and then would come home in the summer or whatever, and then move back to college in the fall and be like, oh my God, that train, I forgot about that. And then again, a few weeks later would block it out. So maybe there is something to that, that after a while you block out the sound. I don't know if there's anybody up there that thinks that the sound is really obnoxious and, you know, they call that noise pollution, something that we didn't really expect. I mean, by and large, you know, we've been waiting for the train all this time. So I'm looking at it positively. My wife takes the train out of Church Street all the time now and absolutely loves it. I think she was on the train this morning, as a matter of fact. She's probably on the train right now. And goes and babysits my grandchildren a couple of days a week up in Boston. So she has rave reviews about the train now. She does say a couple of times it got delayed, a couple of times she had to wait. But for the most part, she's liked the train. So again, I want to make sure that we're not doing the glass half empty thing as opposed to the glass half full thing. I think by and large, it's a success and it's going to be a success. But if you are in the population that live right near it, somebody was complaining to me last night, and while that person was complaining to me, somebody else walked in the room and said, oh, you're talking about that train? Me too. You know, that thing is obnoxious. So in addition to the delays, you have this other issue where if you live right near there, does that drive you crazy or not? Or is it something that you think you could adapt to? Or maybe you just don't have a train coming in so late at night, or maybe you don't have as many late at night as a way to compromise for the people that live in that area. You know, I have something in common with Tim Weisberg. You know, Tim Weisberg had talked about how he had kidney cancer and he had his kidney removed. Well, the same thing happened to me. 2011, I was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And my doctor down here, great doctor. I imagine I can say his name because he's retired. Dr. Signorella, great guy, funny guy too, and a great doctor. And he diagnosed my kidney cancer, right? So I was really concerned about kidney cancer and the fact that he was recommending that the kidney be removed. So he sent me for a second opinion, and the second opinion was a Dr. Turk in Boston. So I go up and see Dr. Turk, and my wife and I, we went and we talked to Dr. Turk, and he said, yeah, I agree with the doctor back home. In fact, the doctor back home is certainly capable of doing the procedure, but I agree with him, the kidney's got to come out. So he came back, I had Dr. Signorella take out the kidney. and everything was fine. That was 2011. So one day my wife and I are watching the news, and all of a sudden we see a doctor from Dover, Massachusetts has been charged with strangling his wife to death. It's Dr. Turek. We're looking at the TV like, oh my God, that's my doctor. What the heck? And he was charged with murder, eventually convicted of manslaughter, taking the life of his wife. And we were just totally and completely horrified. We couldn't believe it. So the next time I went to see Dr. Signorella, I said, hey, did you see the news last week? And he's like, oh, you're talking about Dr. Turek? I said, yeah. I said, nobody could believe it. Well, anything can happen, but it was just kind of, you know, one of those moments in life where you just go like, oh my God, that's Dr. Turek. That's my doctor. He went and see him. He seemed like he was, you know, so great. And he was very knowledgeable, knew his stuff, you know, obviously had to go to medical school and get a degree and all that thrown away because of this unfortunate situation where something happened and he, you know, obviously he took the life of his wife and now he's in prison. But I just remember putting on the television and just like being horrified that that's my doctor. I couldn't believe it. Anyway, 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Hello.
Oh, my God. What a story.
Yes, I know, huh? Yeah, we couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe it when the picture of this doctor was on the TV screen and we had seen him. You know, it was probably maybe a year before that or something like that. But I remember him. You know, we went and talked with him and, you know, he seemed very affable, and he was explaining the, you know, why the kidney needed to compound and everything. The only thing I would say is he was nothing against weightlifters or anything like that, but this guy was a big guy, and I almost looked like he, you know, was on steroids or something, you know. And so I don't know. They say sometimes if you're doing that, you can have roid rage or whatever. And I'm not saying that. I'm speculating. You know what I mean? But he was a big, big dude, and we couldn't believe it.
Yeah, no, that's a good speculation. I think you're safe to speculate on that because I would assume the same thing. I've seen roid rage in person.
So what's on your mind?
It's not nice. So I just wanted to say I didn't know Tim was having a procedure today. I left my phone with my friend and I had to wait for them to wake up in the morning to run over and get it. Luckily, he's only two buildings over from me. We live in the same development. So early this morning when I woke up, I listened to the first two episodes, and then I heard, you know, that he's having a procedure. So if Tim's listening, I just want to say everything. I hope everything goes well, and I hope you had really good soft paper. The most important thing going through all of that is having good quality paper.
Well, you know, the thing is, and he didn't actually say what it was, but everybody kind of figured what it was.
We know. Yeah. When you've been there and done that, you know.
Well, you know, that particular procedure in question, the preparation is the thing that's murder, not the procedure itself. The procedure is nothing. It's the day, the 2 days before that, you know?
Oh, yeah. No,
You have to drink all this stuff and go to the bathroom every hour and all that and not have anything to eat. And, oh, it's just, it's bad.
Well, you know, the last one, what is the product? Miralax.
Yes.
So the last one I just had, which was I got my procedure in October. So now it's the Miralax. It's not that other stuff. And I said, no, I'll never do the Miralax again. I couldn't believe it. In all that water, this big, a big, huge thing you put the Miralax in, with whatever's in that container. I was like, I will go back to the other way. I don't ever want that again.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
I can't wait to be able to talk to Tim. Now, see him, for me, I don't know if it's because the older we are, like I wasn't ready to go anywhere the next day. Mm-hmm. So I don't even see him coming into work tomorrow.
Once the thing is over, they give you food and then, I don't know, I felt pretty good like later that day. And certainly by the next day, I was fine. The rest of that day, probably a little tired. So I think he'll be fine. I think he's still in his late 40s. So he's a little bit younger than me.
Yeah, he's only 47.
Yeah, so he's younger than me.
He's 47.
Yeah, so he's still a young buck.
Yeah.
He's still a young buck. But anyway, I'm thinking to myself, people are turning on the radio. It's 7:19. I'll get up, put the radio on, see what's going on, and they hear us talking about this.
That's okay. Well, you know what? We talk about a lot of stuff with Tim. We cover a lot of stuff.
Right, I know.
And they have this commercial that they play every morning, and it's disgusting, and I won't even talk about that. But,
all right.
So hopefully you won't have a lot of polyps. and his tummy won't be sore. But I also wanted to tell you, I live out by the airport, and I hear the train, and it is wicked loud, and especially in the night. But I have a feeling the reason why he goes hard on that horn by the Church Street right over here where I am is because that hour there's a lot of drunk drivers out, and you want to make sure they, when they get to that intersection, drunk drivers, that midnight hour and all, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you want to make sure they hear it. You don't want them to just drive right through the rails into the train.
Yeah, right. Well, they have that big rail that comes down, you know, that should,
I don't know. If you're really drunk,
So is it,
to say, but
is it annoying to you? Do you not like it? Do you not like it? Do you find it annoying? Is it really awful or is it not that bad?
It's annoying. I mean, I don't know. There's construction going on in the airport right now. They're expanding. I don't know. They just make it so much noise. That's more annoying to me right now than anything.
So it's not something that you don't think, you can handle. You think it's something you can handle.
I don't think I'll ever get used to the train.
All right. Okay. All right.
No.
All right. Well, thank you for weighing in. And Tim will be back tomorrow. And then
I
you can
want to say thanks.
You can ask him about how his day went.
I know. And I just want to say thank you for wanting to take over the 7 to 9 spot.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun to have my own shift every week and come in every week. And yeah, it'll be great. I'm looking forward to it. So you can call. Make sure you call. Make sure you call me on Saturday.
I will.
All right. Thanks very
much. I will. I promise.
All right. 508-996-0500. She promised now. We got that recorded. She's going to call on Saturday when I start my new show, Paul Santos Show, Saturday morning, 7 to 9. And by the way, that Paul Santos Show, not to be confused with the Paul Santos live television show, that's a whole nother animal. That's a whole nother animal, right? It's sort of a cross between Comedy Central and The Tonight Show. But it's really morphed into something a lot of fun. And the thing is, it's on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock on Comcast Channel 95. So if you got Comcast, throw on Channel 95 tomorrow night, and you can enjoy the guests we had. This great singer from Rochester, Shane Fitzgerald. He was terrific. In fact, you can go to YouTube and type in Paul Santos Live Show, and you can see him. We had a great comedian. And then this Sunday morning, 10:30 a.m., ABC6. Now, I know ABC6, we have that new meteorologist, the first woman meteorologist in the history of Rhode Island, giving the forecast right here on the radio. Yep, you heard her already. So it's nice to have her on board here on the radio as well. But Sunday morning, 10:30 a.m., ABC6, we've got a fantastic episode. The Rev, the singer by the name of The Rev. Now you're thinking, The Rev, what does that mean? It's actually short for Reverend. It's the singing Reverend. And the thing is, she was just fantastic. She was an okay singer, but what an entertainer. She had the joint jumping. People were clapping. People were just having a great time. It was a interview that I did with her that turned out great. We have this other comedian, Lloyd Legacy Sharp. And then there was an actress that came on the show, Lana Richard. Beautiful young actress. And the reason why we had her on is because she's going to be in a movie that's going to be on Amazon called Death Comes Calling. And a good friend of mine, Mike Hopkins, is in the movie. Well, guess what? I went out there and I went to Rhode Island and I went to a diner where a scene was being shot. And because I did a sort of like a rundown about, you know, some background scenes and stuff like that, which is also on YouTube, Paul Santos Live Show, I did a whole feature on this movie. So because of that, the director and Mike Hopkins said, hey, maybe we'll put Santos in the background. So they put me in the background sitting at the diner. And then it's like, okay, we got a big surprise for you. I'm like, yeah, what's that? You're going to say a line in the movie. I'm like, I'm going to say a line. Yeah. When I give you the signal, you just get up, start walking toward the door and say, hey, Nick, see you again tomorrow. Because Nick is the guy behind the bar at the diner. So I'm like, oh, okay, all right, okay, I can do that. So, you know, they gave me the signal. I got up, hey, Nick, see you again tomorrow. It's like, that was a little stiff. Why don't you try it again? Hey, Nick, see you again tomorrow. I walk by, you know. So anyway, so I finally got it, I guess. So I said, well, that could very well land on the cutting room floor. Right? I mean, they're going to edit the movie. They're going to do this, do that. He says, no, we're not going to cut that out. We're going to leave it in. I guarantee we're going to leave it in. Okay, well, we'll see. I mean, sometimes decisions get made, and I understand that if they cut it out. But That would be kind of fun if it's in there. So anyway, the movie Death Comes Calling on Amazon coming up. I believe it's going to be in the summer or fall. So that was an interesting experience, you know, watching them. I mean, it took them like all morning to do a 1 minute scene, or maybe longer than 1 minute. They did a couple of scenes. One was about 1 minute and the other one was maybe 2 minutes, but it took all morning just to do that scene. And, you know, it's really fascinating how that all works in the background when a movie or a television show is being shot. Anyway, it's Paul Santos for Tim Weisberg. Welcome into your Tuesday. We're going to have temperatures around 65, maybe inching closer to 70, but it's going to be a lot windier than yesterday. And then tomorrow is going to be another beautiful day. Three in a row, not bad for the springtime. By the way, we were talking about the South Coast Rail making a lot of noise. Do you live anywhere where you find the noise really unappealing? Just, you know, I can't stand the sound of the noise. Number two, we threw out there, haven't heard anybody talk about this, but what about the idea that landlords could potentially be held responsible for tenants selling drugs? Is that a way to crack down on this? That maybe there are some landlords that rent apartments knowing full well that they're renting to drug dealers. Is that something that we should crack down on them too? What do you think about that? I'll give you my opinion in a moment. 508-996-0500. We'll be right back with you this morning until 9 a.m. when Chris McCarthy takes over. And then later this afternoon, Barry. And then on the weekend, my new show, 7 to 9 a.m. on Saturday every single week, followed by Ken Pittman, 9 to noon. And then the debut of Brian's show in the afternoon from 1 to 4. So that'll be great. We'll have live, local talk all day Saturday, so that's 6 days a week right here at WBSM. I don't know, there are too many areas that have live local talk every day, much less 6 days a week. So I think this is really great. And of course, different opinions are expressed here all the time, so we're open to all different opinions on all different subjects. But we're talking about the noisy train. A few people were chiming in on that the sound of the train up there on Church Street is kind of driving them crazy. So I don't know if you have any experience on that. And the other thing, too, is there's a proposal before the state legislature talking about how landlords could be held accountable for the actions of the tenants in terms of selling drugs. And I think the original upheaval about this piece of legislation was the thought that maybe the landlords would be held responsible whether they knew about it or not. Well, according to the proposal that I see, it's not quite that. You may disagree with it anyway, but the proposal is that any landlord who knowingly and intentionally rents, leases, or profits from, or makes available for use, with or without compensation, the dwelling unit, which is used for the unlawful manufacturing, storing, distributing, or using a controlled substance, shall be punished. And then the punishment for the first offense, and it's a civil penalty, not a criminal penalty, so the landlord can't go to jail or anything like that. But the civil penalty is $1,000 for the first offense, $5,000 for the second offense, and $10,000 for the third offense. So I'm thinking to myself, do I agree with that or not? Well, it seems to me that it's difficult to prove. The standard is high, and therefore, I don't think that landlords are going to be roped in unless it can be shown that the landlord knew about it. So if the landlord didn't know about it and they can't show that the landlord knew about it, I don't think there are going to be too many landlords facing that civil penalty. On the other hand, you know, do you really want to burden landlords with this? If you rent an apartment and the person there gets accused of drugs, and again, I use the word accused because there has to be a due process to determine whether or not it's really true or not. The landlord may be in a situation where they really shouldn't be held responsible unless you can actually show proof, and I think it would be difficult to do, that they knew about it. Now, let's say you had a landlord, had an empty apartment. Somebody comes and says, hey, I'm going to rent that apartment. He kind of looks at this person, does a little background check, determines that this person is heavily involved in drugs and gangs and things like that, and goes, I'm going to rent it anyway, and then rents it, and then kind of knows that there's traffic going in and out of there, and people are complaining, and you really didn't do anything about it. Then finally there's a raid, and then, you know, at that point, perhaps the landlord brings an eviction proceeding. But The question is the landlord, why should the landlord be held responsible for that activity? The argument is that the tenant is the one that broke the law, and the tenant is the one that should pay the consequences by being brought before the court. So what do you think about that? And I also want to weigh in on this issue having to do with the primary election being moved back from the 4 weeks. I believe that it has been resolved. The vote's already been taken, although some people say that there should be a reconsideration of that last vote. I had some thoughts on that, about whether or not the primary election should be moved back or left at 4 weeks. Wondering if there are people out there that haven't weighed in on that. You probably have when I was away in Florida, but just curious about that one because that one seemed to be more controversial than I thought it should be. But again, that's just me. 508-996-0500. Back after the news.
A $60 million Navy jet lost at sea. Another suspect found in Christy Noem's purse theft. And how much will you need to retire to California?
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
The cause of a deadly parking garage collapse in Lower Manhattan 2 years ago has been revealed. Kristen Marks reports.
The report says workers removed bricks at the garage at 57 Ann Street without realizing they were supporting the building. They were replacing the bricks at the 98-year-old structure, thinking they surrounded a steel beam. A two-year probe conducted by the New York City Buildings Department and the Manhattan DA says the garage owner and hired engineering firm Inspector are to blame for what they call preventable human errors. The partial collapse killed 59-year-old parking garage manager Willis Moore and injured five others.
New York's MTA says subway fare evasion is down while revenue is up. Officials like Demetrius Critchlow say their low-tech efforts to stop fare beaters by putting fins on turnstile gates is working.
Where gate guards are deployed, there's been a 36% decrease in fare evasion, 36% just from the gate guards. We know that that's been the superhighway of fare evasion.
At a news conference yesterday, the MTA unveiled high-tech gate door prototypes of four very tall gates to be tested this fall at 20 subway stations. The MTA says fare revenue in New York is up 67% since 2021, not just because of new riders, but because more people are now paying. A second suspect accused of stealing the Gucci bag belonging to Homeland Security Secretary Christy Noem is under arrest in Miami Beach. Christian Sanzana appeared in court yesterday. He had a fake California ID and an immigration hold, according to authorities. The first suspect, a Chilean national who was also in the country illegally, was arrested over the weekend. Noem's bag was taken from a restaurant in Washington, D.C. It had her wallet, apartment keys, passport, department security badge, and about $3,000 cash. The Navy says a $60 million jet has been lost at sea after it fell overboard from an aircraft carrier.
In a statement, the Navy said the F/A-18E Super Hornet fighter was under tow in the hangar bay of the USS Harry S. Truman when the MOVE crew lost control of the aircraft. All crew members are accounted for, with one sailor suffering a minor injury. CNN reports the Truman was making a hard turn to evade Houthi fire. The Truman recently had its deployment to the Middle East extended by Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth.
Two Columbia University janitors are suing more than 40 protesters.
Mario Torres and Lester Wilson say they were threatened, pummeled, and held hostage by pro-Palestinian demonstrators during a regular overnight shift. Their lawsuit reveals hand-drawn maps used to identify the locations of heavy equipment that could be used to block doors and windows at the historic building. The janitors claim demonstrators who held them against their will were distributing bike locks, ropes, zip ties, food, cots, and other supplies. They say the experience triggered PTSD, which has left them unable to return to work. I'm Sarah Lee Kessler.
President Trump has signed executive orders related to immigration. Trump signed multiple orders yesterday, ranging from one mandating truck drivers be proficient in English to one cracking down on sanctuary jurisdictions. The White House is focusing on President Trump's immigration crackdown during the first 100 days of his second administration. It's the first of several days meant to showcase Trump's sweeping agenda. Californians believe they need nearly $1.5 million to retire comfortably. Tammy Trujillo has details.
That figure accounts for saving sources like 401ks and IRAs, but excludes real estate. According to a 2025 Northwestern Mutual survey for the San Francisco Chronicle, California's magic number for retirement is the same as last year. It's also $210,000 higher than the average American's expectation. This indicates that Californians are feeling the effects of inflation and the state's high cost of living.
WBSM Sports.
Red Sox traveling to Toronto tonight, 7:07 first pitch, and Celtics and Magic game 5 happens at the Garden at 8:30 tonight. Boston leads that series 3-1.
Now your ABC 6 South Coast forecast, brought to you by C Street.
We start the day with sunshine, temperatures in the low 50s at first, but then getting a little bit warmer into the mid-60s by the afternoon. And by the way, if you are venturing away from the South Coast and into parts of northern Bristol County, a little further inland, you could see some of those temperatures in the low 70s. That's not too shabby, but it is going to be a windy day. We also see clouds increase throughout the day and into the evening as well, looking for a couple of showers after midnight tonight. From the ABC 6 Weather Center, I'm meteorologist Christina Schallhoop on New Bedford's News Talk Station 1420 WBSM.
This WBSM News Update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy, only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven. I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. Stay up to date with New Bedford's News Talk Station, WBSM, and get breaking news alerts and all of our content with the WBSM app.
I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life. That's life. And I can't deny it. Many times I thought I'd cutting out, but my heart.
Told you I like a lot of different kinds of music. There's the great Frank Sinatra, and that's life. You got to take the ups and the downs in life. And Tim is off today. A little bit of a down, but not a big down. Just a little procedure he had to go through, and then he'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning on the Tim Weisberg Show. But for today, it's Paul Santos filling in. So happy to be here, especially with the weather we've been getting. I mean, we were in Florida last week. I know last week was nice here, but then Saturday and Sunday were not very good. But then Monday, yesterday, and today, going to be nice, a little bit more windy today. And then tomorrow is supposed to be another beautiful day in the low 70s. So anytime you get 3 in a row without rain, and 3 in a row with sun, and 3 in a row with temperatures anywhere between 65 and 75, at this time of the year, we will definitely take it. If you'd like to give us a call, as you know, 508-996-0500. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Paul.
Hello there.
So somebody called in and talked about the bumper music and how Tim has it so clear. And I notice it now that you're on. It's real clear. He does something over there with it. I don't know what he said he does, but anyway.
So the music is clear?
Yeah, it's very, it's real good when he does it.
Oh, good,
well,
good.
Well, you know, he does all that technology there.
Oh, yeah. I just come in here and I'm pushing buttons and they got it all set up. So I do pick the music, though. So hopefully it's a little bit something different that, you know, I do different than the other hosts, depending on what kind of music you like.
I like your music. You like funky stuff.
I'm an old time club DJ. You know that?
I know.
Yeah.
Listen.
So what's on your mind?
I got to get up to that show you do. When is it again?
Monday night, 7 o'clock up at Mikey B's. Just sit in the audience and watch. It's a lot of fun. Have you ever seen it?
How long is it?
It's an hour.
I'm going to go one day.
7 to 8. Yeah, come bring some friends in the audience. It's a lot of fun.
All right, listen. So you're talking about the train. I like hearing it. I'm in my yard sometimes.
Wait a minute. You like hearing the sound of the train?
Yeah. I say, oh, there goes the train.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's good. So choo-choo, here comes the train.
But I don't hear it at night. I don't know why, but I hear it during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm outside in my yard, though, and I hear it. I said, oh, there goes the train.
Well, how far away are you from where the train is?
Oh, I'm not far from Whale's Tooth. That's where I would pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
I went once from Whale's Tooth. I'm going to go again, but they keep saying that this bus is taking it back.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to get the staffing up to what they needed. I guess they thought that they had enough staffing, and now they didn't, and that was the reason. But, you know, if you're in the train and you're trying to get somewhere, and unfortunately you have to wait for a bus or something happens, especially if you worked all day, that can be very frustrating.
Yeah, mine is going to be for pleasure, though.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good.
So I won't mind that much.
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you that I walk in the Oak Grove Cemetery, and there's coyotes there.
Oh, so.
Coyotes. There's a den there right now with five little babies.
Wow, that's the first I heard of that.
Yeah, and I know. And you know where the city yard is?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a fence, but you can't see it if you're just driving down mm-hmm. there.
Okay.
There's an anchor fence, you know, that comes all the way down to people's property. Where it begins, this is at the very beginning of Oak Grove, where the old gravestones are, like Howland's. And even all the streets, I noticed there's like streets like Max Steel Street.
Okay.
There's names, Cogsall.
Yep.
It's on there. It's the old part. So anyway, right near there down the bottom where the city yard is, where that fence is, there's a den and there's five cubs or whatever you want to call them in there. They come out. One girl, she told me, she took pictures of them. I just missed them. I was walking by and I was talking with her. She had her dog and she showed me the pictures when they came out. She took pictures. They were in when I came by, and it smelled, though. I went right to the fence and looked at the hole.
You can call animal control, you know, if you think that it's a scary situation or a bad situation for the neighbors. Yeah, you're scared of them. I mean, it's probably bad for the animals, too. But, I mean, the humans, of course, take a little priority. But, you know, they have animal control. Maybe they can go up there and secure that area, because that's what they do, you know, animal control. So give them a call.
Can you imagine, though, they're that close? So there's not.
Yeah.
That's really kind of right across the streets for high school.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, so, you know, maybe you call animal control and, you know, they'll put you in touch with the right person and maybe they can go up there and check it out, because, you know, obviously the neighbors, the people up there, you want to be safe. You don't want to get bitten by one of those coyotes. They could have some kind of disease or some kind of illness that they could possibly transmit to you, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, all right.
What else was you asking? I don't care about the drug thing.
No, okay, all right. And then the other thing was the train, and then let's see what else. Oh, I was going to ask about the moving the primary election up to give the, election commission a little bit more time to deal with the more popular mail-in ballots rather than have 4 weeks and move it back to 6 weeks. That seems to be controversial. I don't know if you had a thought on that one.
No, but I got a thought on that doctor that murdered his wife.
Oh, yeah, that was my doctor.
How long ago was that?
That I had the surgery. I had a surgery removal of my kidney in 2011, but I had the doctor down here do it. But when I first got diagnosed, you know, I wanted to get a second opinion. So my doctor here sent me to Boston, and I met this Dr. Turek. And, you know, he's a big guy. He looked like he was a weightlifter or something like that. And he was perfectly fine. He said, yeah, you should have that kidney taken out, but your doctor back at home can certainly do it. And I'm like, okay. So then I came back. Dr. Signorella did it. It was fine. Everything worked out great. That was 2011, so that's already like 14 years ago. And then one day my wife and I are watching the news, and up on the screen comes Dr. Turek. I was like, oh, my God, look at Dr. Turek. And so we just...
I don't remember that one, though.
Yeah, I mean, we were just, you know, we just couldn't believe it that he was, being charged and so forth. But anyway.
I didn't know Signorella's not there anymore. Yeah. Was that the father or the son?
I don't know. I mean, he's a little older than me. He just retired. So I don't know. He's around my age, probably like in his 60s or late 60s, early 70s. I don't know if he, you know, if his father or I guess...
Oh, he was good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was funny, too. I liked the sense of humor. That was the thing I enjoyed about him. All right. I got to go to a break, but thank you very much for the call. And I hope you're listening Saturday from 7 to 9.
Okay, Paul.
All right. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. 508-996-0500. Back with more of the Tim Weisberg Show in just a moment. here on WBSM. You wouldn't even talk to me. That last caller said, you like funky, don't you? Okay, I plead guilty. That's one of the kinds of music I enjoy, being the old-time club DJ. But that's not all. I'm not going to just play that one style of music and drive everybody crazy, because there are probably some people that don't like it. But yeah, I enjoyed all that stuff, especially the early 80s dance music when I was out there and smugglers spinning records and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, glad to have you here. It's Paul Santos filling in for Tim Weisberg. Tim will be back tomorrow. Just a minor medical procedure. Nothing big. No big deal. But he will be back tomorrow and pick up where we left off. And then starting Saturday, I've got my own show that will start 7 to 9 a.m., followed by Ken Pittman, followed by Brian Thomas in the afternoon. That'll be coming up on Saturday. So that'll be fun, where you have live local talk 7 days a week. Now, the other issue that came up when I was on vacation was this whole thing about the preliminary election. I know there were strong feelings on either side, but I don't know. It just seemed like it was one of those issues that got contentious and divisive, but not really to the point where I thought it should have, but that's just me. So I'm reading, there's a number of articles here. Standard Times did an article about it. New Bedford Light did an article about it. I saw different articles about it. But reading from the Standard Times here, this year's preliminary election will be held in early October, following tradition, rather than move it up to September 16th, which had been requested by the city election officials, because they say they need more time to provide mail-in voting. The city council denied a request to reconsider the proposed date change in a 7-4 vote. It had initially okayed the change in committee, but then voted it down 8-3 in full session on March 27th. So then the election commission asked for the reconsideration at the April 24th meeting, and it was voted down 7-4. So it's an issue that's been, you know, dealt with, argued back and forth, and the decision was made to leave it alone. Now, Council President Shane Burgo, he had urged his colleagues to reconsider and change the date. Failing that, he said, it would be kind of a disenfranchisement of voters accustomed to mail-in voting who may not be able to get to the polls, and it would endanger the whole mail-in voting altogether in New Bedford. I don't know if I would go that far. But then Manuel DiBrito Jr., chair of the Board of Election Commissioners, said the extra time was needed from the preliminary to the regular election on November 4th due to the increased demand of mail-in voting. Traditionally, the preliminary election is held 4 Tuesdays prior to the regular election. During a March 18th meeting with the Council Committee on Appointments and Briefings, this is what was discussed. In the past election, 1/3 of our voters, 10,000 people out of 30,000 were doing mail-in voting. And without the extra time, the processing would be difficult. The time crunch would make it difficult to get the results, make the new ballots, send them out. If there's a recount in the preliminary, there would be even less time. So Mr. DiBrito, the election commissioner, said things have changed. Voter habits have changed. The laws have changed. People are getting more comfortable with mail-in voting. Michelle Tassinari, first deputy secretary and legal counsel with the Secretary of State's Election Division, agreed with the recommendation, stating in a letter to the council, if the preliminary is held only 4 weeks before the election, there would likely not be sufficient time to prepare the ballots to mail to the voters for the general election. The Election Commission had serious concerns about this. Under state law, it is the council's decision whether to opt out of mail-in voting altogether. Well, that's another thing they could do. The Board of Election Commissioners has serious concerns whether we'd be able to properly administer mail-in votings if the council continues to reject the proposed date for the preliminary election as recommended by the Election Commission and the Secretary of State. So they're going against recommendations of people that have looked at this. Now, some councilors, like Councilor Brian Gomes, for example, he voted against the change and spoke against the change, saying that the numbers didn't justify the change. The numbers were much higher in the last election because of the presidential election, and you don't really want to mess people up. Most of the people I've talked to in the city would like to see it stay the same, so the constituents say, leave it the same, leave it the same. So that's important. If your constituents are telling you, leave it the same, then you should listen to your constituents. Councilor Oliver also spoke against making the change. And so it went back and forth. Well, it just seems to me that the concern about what day you're going to have the primary is minuscule compared to the fact that only 10% of the people are voting in the first place. So when somebody says, well, the population, they're going to get mixed up as to what day the election is. You can't do that. What do you mean, the 10% of the people who bother to vote in the first place? The 10% of the people who give a damn to come and vote? That population, that's what you're talking about. Not only 10% of the registered voters, it turns out that that's just the registered voters, not even counting the people who aren't registered. So what is it, like 5% of the population that you're talking about? They're going to be confused? Really? They're going to be confused? I just don't think it's a big deal whether it's the 16th or whether it's 4 weeks before. I mean, if the election commissioner, the person that's actually counting the votes, is saying, hey, you're really putting a burden on us, well, why not listen to the people that are counting the votes? I mean, that was my thought. Now, the other idea is, well, you know, they're trying to pull a fast one, you know. I don't know about that. You know, I mean, you can publicize what day it is. People just know that it's 4 weeks. Yeah, right. As we're coming up to the 4 week mark, everybody's like, hey, wait a minute. The election's coming up. Hey, it's 4 weeks before the final. You get it, better get down there. 10% of the people, 90% of the people don't know what day the election is anyway, except for the final election. 90% of the people don't care. So that's what the discussion should be about to me more than what day it is. So again, that's just my thought on it. I don't think anybody's trying to pull a fast one. I think it was just a situation where, you know, the election commissioner was saying, hey, I need more time to do the job. So I don't know that that favors anybody. I don't know that that hurts anybody. I suppose an argument could be made. I heard somebody say, well, the incumbents don't like it because if you're a challenger and you get on the final ballot, now you have 6 or 8 weeks to get your name out there and say, okay, I represent change, and I have 8 weeks to go door to door, and I have more time to, you know, do all this and do that. Because people don't pay attention until the finals. So if you're an incumbent, you're like, oh, keep it short. That was what somebody said to me. So I don't know. I mean, you know, to me, the participation is the biggest thing. All right, we'll be right back. Paul Santos in for Tim Weisberg here at WBSM. Argued back and forth. They even had a reconsideration about it, and it got shot down, so to speak. But I don't know. It seemed like it was more controversial than it needed to be. But that's just my thought on that. How about holding landlords accountable for tenants having drugs in their unit or selling drugs in their unit? Is that fair to hold the landlords responsible for something that the tenant is doing? I mean, if the tenant is breaking the law, the tenant is breaking the law. Why should the landlord be held responsible?